This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It is a pleasure to have you with us on a brand new episode of Afternoons with Helen Farmer, catching up with some of our favourite guests, the hottest topics, and answering your questions too. And truly, one of Dubai's most in-demand doctors managed to share an hour of her precious time to answer your questions around all things skin. Dr. Natalia Spearings was on hand discussing acne, ageing, and a 15 dirham cream that she thinks you should be picking up next time you're in the pharmacy. From dermatology to dreams, it was Dr. Jana Khalifi who is joining us, spiritual psychologist, to decode your dreams, some of the most common symbols, what are recurring dreams trying to tell us, and should you be avoiding cheese late at night? And in our psychology hour, we were asking, be honest, if you had to choose between being with someone in a relationship who is smart or being with someone who is funny, what would you choose? Dr. Thraya, clinical psychologist, was on hand to explore. And if you felt your brain power fading, your memory getting worse, don't worry. The memory coach, Josh McCartney, is on hand to offer you some tips and tricks to help you stay sharp anywhere in the world.
Healthy Habits
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Great to have you with us for what is always a very, very busy clinic indeed. We're talking skincare, skin conditions and skin stories. We're in conversation with Dr. Natalia Spearings, consultant dermatologist at King's. When she's here in Dubai, she splits her time between the clinics, but is mostly found at the hospital in Dubai Hills. Dr. Natalia, welcome back to Dubai. How
Hello.
Are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm really well, really well. I think the temperature has shot up since the last time you were over.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we're going to be having lots of sun care, skin care questions, some moles and freckles and sun sensitivity and all of that good stuff. I was thinking of you yesterday, actually, because I saw something in the headlines that I wanted to get your take on. It's called Google Derm and sounds maybe a bit dodgy, but it's coming. Yeah. You can ask Google about your skin conditions. So apparently, Google, unsurprisingly, gets a huge number of queries about skin every year, about 10 billion searches about skin, hair and nails.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Dr. Google. So what they're trying to do is use technology. So it's launching a new feature called Google Derm. You'll use your phone's camera to take 3 images of your skin or hair or nail concern from different angles. Then you get asked questions about your skin type, how long you've had that issue, other symptoms. An AI model analyzes the information and draws from its knowledge of 288 conditions to give you a list of possible matching conditions that you can then research further. I can tell by your reaction so far, maybe not a fan. What's your thoughts?
Stunned to silence. Well, I think my first reaction to that is there's about 3,000 known skin conditions. So 280-something doesn't really cut it, but fine. The use of artificial intelligence for skin diagnosis is something that's been tried for years, and it's never really worked very well. There was only one good publication in The Lancet, which is a major journal, about how AI seemingly was better at diagnosing melanoma than humans by looking at pictures. But that's very controversial. So generally speaking, I find it difficult to diagnose some things through photographs, or I often find it difficult. People send me photographs all the time, like WhatsApp, email, constantly. And often I have to say, I'm so sorry, but I cannot tell you by just looking at a photograph. It's a 2D image or a 1D image even of a 3-dimensional thing. I would use this with caution, okay? So, and I definitely try to tell patients not to Dr. Google things, because it can lead you down a rabbit hole of just
panic.
It can make you panicked and it can make you crazy. So I don't know, you know, maybe this will be different, but probably not.
I'm going to say it for you. So you think someone with perhaps 1 or 2 degrees and years, if not decades of experience, might be better than 3 photos and an algorithm, perhaps?
Potentially. I would agree.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad I've got you with me then and not Google
not
Derm. Consultant dermatologist Dr. Natalia is with us. Lots of questions coming in for you already. Let's start with this one saying, if my body is full of tattoos, covered, how can I watch out for moles and anything worrying? Great question.
That is a great question.
Tell us more.
Yeah. So that this poses a major problem for the patient and for me as well. So, you know, I've had patients who've had their tattoos done around their moles, which is always very clever. But yes, this is a problem. So it is very with difficulty is what I would say. And this is the kind of patient where I would say go for an annual skin check, which for most people is a little bit unnecessary unless you've had a history of skin cancer and so on. But in this specific situation, you need someone to look at your moles properly with a dermatoscope on a regular basis if you have a lot of moles. And the likelihood is that you're going to have some of those moles removed because the tattoo pigment changes the way they look to me. And then I can't really tell what's happening with the pigment network. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, that does mean that you may end up having your tattoo be changed because you're going to have little moles removed maybe. But it's very with difficulty, I would say, if you're going to self-examine. Definitely see a professional for this.
Okay, really hope that helps. We've got Dr. Natalie with us this afternoon. Claire's been in touch actually through Instagram DM saying, are there any over-the-counter options for melasma due to pregnancy? For anyone who's not familiar with melasma, can you explain a little bit about it and what treatment options are? Because I know this is actually one of your areas of interest and expertise.
Yeah, so melasma is hormone-induced hyperpigmentation on the skin. So it's like brown marks that occur in kind of a mask distribution, if you will, like on the forehead, the cheeks, the upper lip, and the chin often. It can be triggered by pregnancy or change in hormones. So unfortunately, there is no great available over-the-counter option to treat melasma because the gold standard treatment is a topical cream called hydroquinone, which in most of the world is on prescription only in a strength above 2%. So you would need it as a compounded formulation or a cream, and it works really well, but you do have to get it from a doctor and on prescription.
Okay, that's useful in itself, and I know you work with a lab here to do exactly that, put together those compound creams. Dr. Natalia, what I love about your Instagram is exactly what I enjoy about chatting with you. Very no nonsense. And no, I truthfully do, because I feel like there's lots of doctors who are willingly, you know, bamboozling people with jargon and technical terms. And you've spoken recently about how it's important that dermatologists can stay neutral when attaching themselves to brands. One such group that don't do that are celebrities. And we've seen an absolute, please excuse the pun, rash of celebrity skincare lines coming out. And I was curious to get your take on them because we've got everyone from, well, Gwyneth and Goop, J-Lo with J-Lo Beauty, Rihanna and Fenty, Carmen Electra's is called Go-Go Skincare, which I really enjoy.
Nice.
even Pharrell, who, by the way, he doesn't age. I'd buy his products.
The singer?
Yeah, he looks 12 and he's got to be knocking 50. But have you tried any of them? Any favorites? And no? No, she
no,
says
I'm not
while
trying.
Laughing.
I just don't really use, I don't use very much. I don't use any skincare, really. So, I mean, I use a cleanser, I use Vaseline as a moisturizer, and I use a prescription cream, but that's it. So I generally avoid using all cosmetic skincare products for multiple reasons. I think the most basic thing to say here is that there's not going to be any difference between any of these products. Like, J-Lo's product isn't going to be different from Nivea. Like these, because all skincare products are basically made in the same place. They're all made, there's like three factories in the world, which basically make all the creams you buy from Boots or wherever. So the difference will be the packaging, the price tag, the fragrance, and how it's marketed. And that's how it's going to be different from, J-Lo's is different from Carmen Electra's, which is different from Pharrell's. So, I mean, these, and they're not coming up with these products themselves. I mean, what does J-Lo know about skincare?
I'm sure she looks very nice in a lab jacket and some goggles, but
I'm sure she's been spending years and years coming up with these formulations. and, you know, that's what she's been spending her time doing. But I mean, really, this is pure marketing and sales, and it will work very well. I mean, Kylie Skin has done extremely well, you know, so I mean, these products sell, and I'm not saying that that's bad. I mean, whatever, it's business, they sell things. But from a skin point of view, you know, I don't care if you use Kylie Skin, J-Lo, Goop, whatever. It's all the same.
But as you say, you're paying for marketing, you're paying for branding, and you're paying for that. Is this going to make me feel a little bit closer to being J-Lo? I wish. Right,
if it does that, that's cool.
Yeah, feel good factor.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're sorting out your skin.
Healthy habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
When I say we, I don't mean me. I mean consultant dermatologist Dr. Natalia Spearings is with us. She is here visiting the UAE. For how long are you in town for now, Dr. Natalia?
I'm here till mid-August.
Yay, brilliant.
Most likely. Yeah, because of, you know, red list.
I reckon longer. I'm on a mission to get you to move here. You can find Dr. Natalia at King's College Hospital up at Dubai Hills. So by all means, get in touch. But you're going to have to be quick because those appointments go fast. I know your team is always very busy trying to juggle your schedule. So thank you for your time this afternoon. CBD beauty products, apparently finally legal here in the UAE. There's even a local brand called Glow Destination and its products contain CBD. Those are cannabinoids that are apparently very good for a bit of glow and a bit of anti-inflammatory. Have you had a go on anything CBD related yet?
Not through skincare, you know, not through skincare or any other.
Please be careful.
No other way either. Actually, yes, exactly. I've never played with CBD in any form. But no, actually, I haven't come across it in skincare ever. So I actually am very ignorant about this, and I don't know if it's legal here. I just tried to Google it, but I couldn't find out.
It was blocked.
Do you know if it's legal?
Well, we have heard there is a UAE-based brand that contains CBD that is licensed and available. So I'm willing to experiment if you are. Maybe that'll be
our next
installment. All right, brilliant. We've got so many messages, Natalia. I'm going to try and get through as many as I can. One from Anonymous is asking about enlarged pores, basically saying... pores are getting bigger the older I get and nothing works. But I'm going to tag that onto Joe's message, who is saying, what's the best treatment for very oily skin with large pores and blackheads? Tried almost every over-the-counter product, but nothing seems to control the oiliness. So let's address pores first, and then we'll go on to Joe. It's J-O-E, so a man, if that makes any difference. What can we do about enlarged pores? And do they get bigger as we get older?
Yeah, so they do get bigger as you get older due to sun exposure. So what we think is happening is that you're reducing the collagen in the dermis, which is allowing the hair follicle opening to dilate. So a pore is just an opening of a hair follicle in the skin. So, and it's directly related to oily skin. So the more oil you produce, the more enlarged that pore will become over time. So enlarged pores associated with oiliness and also associated with acne, because oiliness and acne often go hand in hand. There's only one way to reduce oiliness and to reduce the size of pores, and that's by going on a drug called oral Accutane or Raccutane. It is the only way to do that.
I think a lot of people find the thought of medication, especially that one, which has been plagued with myths and issues.
Misinformation.
Yeah, and misinformation over the years. Are you able to put anyone's minds at ease? And I mean, for someone like Anonymous, who's just concerned about pore size rather than acne, is it a bit extreme?
No, it's not actually. So using a low-dose Accutane for more of a cosmetic reason, which is, for example, enlarged pores or general oiliness, is actually a well-established use of that medicine. So Accutane or Raccutane has gotten a really bad rep for no good reason, because it is a very safe and effective drug when taken correctly for the correct patient and so on. So under medical supervision and et cetera, et cetera. So no, it's not extreme at all, and it works really well. And it's safe and effective. So no, it's not a big deal. I'm actually doing a masterclass series via my Instagram, like talking all about the myths and the evidence base against the myths on my Instagram over this month, actually. So, you know, I'm going to be really talking in depth about everything that's talked about with side effects with that medicine, because it puts off people who would actually really benefit from it, which is unfortunate.
I really hope that helps, Joe. And over the counter can only take you so far. It might be time to go see an expert. Sean's been in touch saying, I've got mild atopic skin eczema, currently using Protopic ointment whenever it troubles me. But do you have any better suggestions, please?
So Protopic is a type of anti-inflammatory cream or gel or ointment that's similar to a topical steroid, but it's not a steroid. So it's called topical tacrolimus. This is just the drug name. So Protopic is brilliant. I use it for faces because it's really good for faces where you don't want to put steroids on your face for a long time. But it's not super potent. So it's like a moderate potency cream in terms of treating eczema. So I wouldn't generally use it on a body. So for body, you need a stronger thing and something more like a topical steroid, like Elicom ointment or something stronger. So that's what I would suggest. If you're having mild atopic eczema on your body, Protopic is probably not strong enough to get rid of it properly.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking skin this afternoon on our health show with Dr. Natalia Spearings, consultant dermatologist. She's spread the time between the UAE and the UK, and we're lucky enough to have her in Dubai right now until August. She can be found at King's College Hospital, Dubai Hills, where she's taking appointments, but you're going to have to be fast, both getting your messages in and in getting an appointment as well. Dr. Natalia, lots and lots of questions. We're going to go through as many as we can. A message here saying, my wife suffers from dermatitis or urticaria. Did I say that right?
Urticaria.
Thank you. Her skin gets irritated from airflow, cool air, humid air, hot weather. So almost 80% of Dubai weather and ACs. How can we find a cure and who could we visit? We visited so many dermatologists, but with no positive outcome, which sounds, thank you for that. That sounds really distressing for your wife, really frustrating for both of you. These triggers sound plentiful. What can this couple do?
So the first thing is to establish what the diagnosis here is. So urticaria is very different from dermatitis or eczema. So, and usually that can be made just by looking at the skin and, you know, seeing what the rash is and saying, yes, this is urticaria, this is dermatitis. And then looking at these triggers, because you can get urticaria triggered by, a whole assortment of things. So urticaria are itchy wheals that occur on the skin they can just happen for no reason, or they can be triggered by, for example, cold. You can get cold urticaria. You can get stressed urticaria. You know, people who like get red blotches on their neck when they do public speaking, that's stressed urticaria. So these things can all be triggered by various things. So it'd be then looking at, you know, what is the diagnosis and then what would therefore be the appropriate treatment. I know it's frustrating to see a lot of doctors, and the last thing anyone wants to do is see another doctor, but I would hope that I would be able to potentially help this person.
So you can find Dr. Natalia at King's, but yes, always busy, here till August, so get moving. Please, said if you want me to refer on with phone number of the clinic, by all means message me on 4001 and I'll reply with that. May has been in touch saying, hormone changes after pregnancy. I now have what looks like teenage breakouts. Help. Mm. And then about 5 exclamation marks. So how can we help,
no.
May?
Yeah, so again, looking at the acne, and yes, it can be triggered by pregnancy, which is really unfortunate, like for the hormone changes. So just looking at how bad the acne is and what kind of acne it is, and then going for whether topical treatments are appropriate or antibiotics or, you know, hormonal treatments like the pill, and kind of deciding what the best route is for the patient. The one thing I would say is that if you're breastfeeding, you have limited choice. So if you've just given birth, then and you're breastfeeding, it doesn't give us loads of options with treatment, but that doesn't mean you cannot get treatment. Mm-hmm. So you can definitely still treat acne. It's just going to depend a bit about the type and how bad it is, and then, you know, your life situation at the time.
Okay, really hope that helps. And I think that's exactly right for many of the conditions we're talking about this afternoon. We get used to being in a certain amount of discomfort or looking a certain way and just accepting that's who we are and how we have to live. And that's so often not the case across all sorts of different health issues, including skin.
Absolutely.
And there are many experts who can make life a bit more comfortable or make you feel more confident. So please don't suffer. Alex has been in touch. We're talking about the sun earlier, saying, as I get older, I'm more reactive to the sun and get really itchy rashes. What can I do? I play golf and I'm outside a lot. So itchy rashes, is that a heat rash? I don't know. But as he's getting older, more reactive to the sun.
Yeah, so it seems that people do get more sensitive to sun and heat as they get older. Now, why that is, I don't really know, but it seems to be a general kind of trend amongst humans. One thing I would look at is it your sunscreen? Is that causing irritation? And you can have kind of a sun-related reaction to sunscreen, which is a bit of an odd one to think about, but you can have like a photo-induced eczema where when you combine a sunscreen with sunlight, then you react to the sunscreen. But if you weren't in the sun with the sunscreen on, you wouldn't, which is a bit odd considering that you're meant to wear sunscreen in sun. But you can have that. So chemical sunscreens tend to be culprits here with irritation of sun, so irritation of skin. So that's one thing I would look at. And whether there's something else that's making you more susceptible to burning, for example, medications. So as we get older, we tend to go on more medications, whether it's for blood pressure, cholesterol, whatever. That can change how you react to sun, and also skincare products. So as you get older, you may change your skincare, and that can also make you more susceptible to irritation from sun itself. So there's lots of things to look at.
Oh, it's a minefield. Sorry. Wait, no, it's no, it's it it's absolutely fine. I think that's why I really appreciate your time today, to be honest. Andrea's acne seems to be a bit of a hot topic today, and Andrea's been in touch saying, is it worth doing any blood tests for teenage acne? When is the point that you reach out to a dermatologist when it comes to acne, and are there tests that can be helpful?
So no, there are no blood tests. So that's, I would just say no blood tests required for anyone of any age with acne, actually. There are no blood tests unless you go on treatment, and that treatment may require a blood test. And then what was the second question? It was,
At what point do you come and see a specialist?
So I always say when the acne bothers the child. So if your teenager looks like their acne is bothering them psychologically, whether it's keeping them from doing things, inhibiting their activity, that's one way to look at it. The other way is if they're starting to have scarring. So if the child is starting to get marks in the skin that are permanent, that is another reason to look for treatment. But those would be the two main ones. So, and the psychological impact of acne cannot be understated, or overstated even, because we know that acne causes depression in teenagers. And you may not associate their skin with their low mood. Do you know what I mean? Because lots of teenagers are moody. But if they have even mild acne, that can affect their self-esteem and their mood. So looking at those kind of things, I think, is really important when you think about whether or not to take your child to see a doctor.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In conversation this hour with consultant dermatologist Dr. Natalia Sparings. She is here in the UAE through till August, practicing at King's College Hospital at Dubai Hills. And we have stolen her away from a very busy clinic for just another 10 minutes. So let's go with the text line, Dr. Natalia. We've had a message from a desperate mum saying, my six-year-old has eczema and now has patches he has scratched. I've been asked to give him Locoid, but it doesn't help. Also, he has melia, and is there something that can help? She says, I am desperate now. Poor little six-year-old, that is, it's really, as someone who grew up with eczema, it's beyond distressing for both the kid and the parent. So what advice would you give anyone who feels like they are at breaking point with their little one in eczema?
So I think the first thing to say is eczema is definitely totally treatable in children. So no child should have to suffer with eczema. The next thing is to really optimize topical treatment. So Locoid is not a bad topical steroid. It's not the first one I go for, but it's not bad. Really, when it comes down to treatment failure for topical steroids, there's always two things I look at. One is this definitely eczema? So that's the first thing, which is very important to establish. And the second thing is, how are you using that topical? So are you using the right volume, the right amount of time, like applying it the right twice a day, once a day, whatever your doctor has suggested, and making sure you're optimizing that topical treatment, because topical treatments are extremely effective for eczema when used appropriately. And the most common reason I see them failing is either the steroid isn't the right steroid or that it's not being used correctly. Mm-hmm. That just has to be explained. So I have a feeling that this is almost certainly going to be eczema, but that the topical has not been used correctly for whatever reason. And just optimizing that, just a few small changes can make a huge difference to that clinical outcome for the child. And it is completely correctable.
Okay. Really hope that helps, desperate mum and your little one too. Anna's been in touch saying, I've developed melia on my eyelids over the last few years and looks really horrible. I can't get rid of them despite exfoliating. So how do I get rid of them? What is it melia? What is it? And how can we help Anna and anyone else who's suffering?
So I say melia, but apparently, according to Instagram, it's melia, because
I did a video on it. Then if it's on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. So melia is how I say it, but that's apparently incorrect. But melia, what am I, whatever. So these little lesions, they're little inclusion cysts on the skin, and they look like little yellowy, white, tiny little pinprick spots. So the way to remove them is actually not by exfoliating, but by extracting them out. If they're on your eyelids, you probably want to see a professional, not necessarily a dermatologist, but a very good beautician can do this very carefully as well. You puncture them and just like literally extract the inclusion cyst. That's physical ways of doing it. That's the only way to remove them.
Okay, that's useful in itself. Thank you. I think we're going to be talking extractions here as well. Anonymous message saying, my 12-year-old has so many blackheads on her nose, even though she's pedantic about washing her face. We cannot get them out. What can we do?
Okay, so blackheads are open comedones. So they're cloggings of the hair follicle that are exposed to air and they oxidize and turn black. So that's what they are. So they're open comedones. And that's considered a pre-acne lesion. So when you have comedones, you want to correct the sticky cells and kind of remove them. So what you probably will need is, if they're really big, have them professionally extracted. Again, the beauticians do a great job with this. But then following that up with the correct topical. And so you'd want to use a topical retinoid, something like Differin gel, to help stop those cells from reaccumulating in as a comedone.
Okay. I really hope that helps. Yeah. Even is that even in a 12-year-old?
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
If they can stand the extraction, yeah.
Bit of numbing cream. Sonia was asking earlier about gadgets, but I'm curious to get your take on this as well. Would appreciate doctor's opinion on jade rollers and rollers with needles. Thank you both very much. Asking on behalf of three friends. So lots of people want to know how you feel about rollers and rollers with needles.
Okay, so rollers with needles are like, microneedling derm rollers. So jade rollers, total gimmick. They don't do anything for skin. So please don't bother buying a jade roller. Like, it's just, you might as well just put a spoon on your face. It doesn't really make a difference. So, I have a pretend jade roller, which is a chapstick, and I just roll it on my face. I'm like, this is my jade roller. It doesn't do anything.
Saving us money, Dr. Natalia. I love it. But what about needles? Because we know that of kind of microneedling can be really effective when it comes to scar recovery and even application of some products. So what about rollers with needles for home use?
So I wouldn't ever use them at home. And there's a couple of reasons why. Because one is that you're almost certainly not going to be able to get to the depth of the dermis you need to be able to stimulate a repair response from a dermal roller, because you really need to get to bleeding. And you're not going to do that to yourself at home because it'll hurt. And you can't actually buy them. Usually you can't buy them commercially that they're long enough, like the needles. The second thing is that if you have any skin disease at all, if you have anything wrong with your skin, whether it's acne, pigment, rosacea, whatever, that will almost certainly make it worse. So if you start rolling over your own skin problem, you will roll yourself into a more of a problem. So I would avoid any kind of sticky needles in your own face at home of any sort, generally speaking.
Good. Okay. So, yeah. Thank you for that. And last question of the day. A 34-year-old listener says, when should we start using anti-aging creams and what should they contain? I have sensitive skin. So 34, when should you start using anti-aging? And are there any active ingredients or specific brands or creams that you recommend?
So you can start using anti-aging things from when you start seeing signs of aging. So in your 30s, you can start seeing fine lines around your eyes, for example. That's fine. So the most effective anti-aging product on the market ever is a topical retinoid, and that's called tretinoin. And in Dubai, you can just buy it at a pharmacy. That's your famous cretin cream for 14 dirhams.
I was just about to say, how have we got through almost an hour of not talking about the 15 dirham anti-aging cream?
I have no idea. It's the first time ever. So yeah, that 15 dirham cream, you just go to the pharmacies. You have to ask the pharmacist for it because it's not on the shelf. So you have to ask for the retinoic acid cream. And then you just use that once a day at night, but not if you're pregnant or breastfeeding.
There you go. And in terms of usage, start with the 0.025, use after cleansing.
Correct.
And listen to me. This is consultant dermatologist Helen Farmer. And use your sunscreen the next day. It is called tretinoin. If you want to message us on 4001, I will tell you the name of it. We have, unfortunately, have no commercial affiliation with this. We'd be in the Bahamas right now if we did. Dr. Natalia, such a pleasure to have you with us as ever. We'll definitely have you back on before you head off. But in the meantime, you can find Dr. Natalia Spearings, consultant dermatologist at King's College Hospital at Dubai Hills. And again, if you want those contact details, drop me a line, 4001. I will reply with that.
Healthy Habits
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking dreams this afternoon with Dr. Yana Khalifa, spiritual psychologist, and she's known to interpret dreams and give advice based on your circumstances. So if you want your dream decoded, or you're curious about a recurring dream or a symbol that crops up in yours and maybe how it could apply to your waking life, then get in touch. As I said, you can be anonymous, completely understand, just, keep it clean. That would be my one request this afternoon. Dr. Yana, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. Really appreciate your time. And I'm fascinated by dreaming. I really, really am. So can you tell us a little bit, before we get into decoding some of the symbols, what do we know about why we dream?
Hello, Helen. How are you? Hi, Dubai Eye. How are you guys?
Good, thank you. I'm so curious about this next hour.
Me too. I'm super excited to share some info about dreams and just about how dreams can help you develop yourself and your life. So it's a very powerful 1 hour, and I'm so thankful to Dubai Eye to actually host us. And thank you, Helen, very much. All right. So the first thing is, you asked, why do we dream, or where do dreams come from? Was that the question? What was the first question?
Why do we dream? What purpose do they serve?
All right. So very, very basically put, look at your mind as a computer and it's processing information from everywhere. And the images we see in our dreams are nothing but what our surroundings have given us throughout the day. So, you know, when you turn off your computer, very simply, it just goes like shutting down and then slowly it goes into sleep mode. So that's the same thing. Your mind is doing exactly the same thing. It's just processing or filing of information that you have accumulated throughout the day. So it's a very fun imagery way to file what you already know.
Okay, so it's our brain kind of sorting and trying to make sense of it. Sometimes it can result in some pretty wacky storylines and circumstances. And often those can repeat. So what do we know about recurring dreams? What are our dreams trying to tell us when they keep on coming back to us?
All right. So recurring dreams fall into the category of messages. It is your mind that is trying to give you a message. It's like a gift to you, right? So it's telling you, okay, look, this is really not working out for me. My life at the moment is not working out for me, or I am really like this guy, or you should pursue this passion. So a message dream comes from your subconscious, and the recurring dream is something that you're refusing to listen to. So it's like a slight knock on the door. You know, someone knocks at your door and you don't answer. What do they do again? They knock again. So, you know, this is what actually repetitive dreams are. The moment you actually take a look at the dream and interpret it and understand it, this is the moment that everything just becomes easier and you will never have that reoccurring dream again. The moment you decipher a reoccurring dream, you don't have that dream again.
So you decipher, you understand what it's trying to tell you, you address it and it should abate, which is particularly helpful if it's a dream that you find distressing. And we've had a message here, anonymous message. And as I said, don't worry about revealing your inner soul. A message here saying, my recurring dream is either drowning or being in danger, but not being able to shout for help, even though I physically shout out in my sleep. I also sleep talk and have a history of sleepwalking in my family.
All right. So sleepwalking and a history of sleepwalking and sleep talking, this means that you are not actually going into a healthy pattern of sleeping. And this could be dangerous. And this, you should consult someone about this, a sleep doctor or even a psychologist that can help you to actually fall asleep in a healthy way. Whenever we feel danger or whenever we feel like we're drowning, it means that in our life we're suffocating. It means that there's something that is horribly bothering us that we're not willing to address and voice out. So in the dream, the inability to shout it out, the inability to express it is the same expression throughout the day. It means that you're unable to basically explain that which is bothering you in your everyday life. And this is important because basically you need to address those things that are really bothering you and suffocating you. A good night's sleep is essential to creativity and work. So if you're having constant recurring dreams about drowning and suffocating, it means that, you know, your life is not the way that you would like it to be. And take a look at what's really bothering you.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Dr. Joanna Khalifa is with us this afternoon. As we talk about what you dream about at night, reoccurring symbols, reoccurring dreams, and maybe busting a few myths too. Dr. Joanna, is there any truth in the claim that cheese will give you nightmares if you eat it close to your bedtime?
There's absolutely no relation between cheese eating and your dreams. Funnily enough, the myth cannot stand. But the one thing that might apply to some people is that cheese makes you feel comfortable. It reminds you of comfort. If you love cheese, it might remind you of home, being a kid, going to sleep. So maybe that is why perhaps you could have better dreams. But actually, there's no psychological link behind it.
Good to know. Go forth, people, and eat cheese as close to bed as you like. Now, let's look at some of the most common dreams and what they might mean. One for me, I'm happy to bear my soul. There's lots of messages coming in from people who want some bit of decoding. I have frequent dreams about my teeth falling out. I'd say maybe at least once a month, I'll have a dream where I bite into a food and I can feel my teeth splay and I bite down and I kind of spit out bits of my teeth. An alarming message come in on 4001 saying, in Russian culture, dreaming of teeth falling out means someone you know will die. And if there's blood, it's a relative. I sincerely hope that's not the case when it comes to you as a spiritual psychologist, Dr. Joanna. So tell us, should I be worried about my frequent teeth falling out dreams?
All right. So in Russian culture, and I'm very familiar with it because I've actually grown up in Bulgaria and in Eastern Europe, so I know about this myth about the teeth falling out representing death. Now, I want to say something. This is for sure a cultural myth, and this has no scientific evidence, and in other cultures, it doesn't exist. Right. But having said that, it's not a good dream to dream that your teeth are falling out. It's an indication that you have some sort of health issue that needs to be aligned. And if you actually go and you can literally research which tooth represents which organ. Ooh. And it's a powerful way to discover. Helen, you still there?
Yes, I'm now. I'm just about to start Googling my teeth and which teeth are falling out in my dreams.
So each tooth represents a certain body organ, and it is extremely useful if you have this dream to research which tooth represents which body organ, because you can get some healing and some consultancy from doctors prior to any disease manifesting or prior, you know, to you actually feeling ill. So it's very powerful if used in a positive way where you can, you know, empower yourself and educate yourself further. But absolutely no way that in any way have fear that if you see a tooth falling out that, you know, this is something very detrimental. It is not like that.
Okay. Dr. Joanna, thank you. Going to the text line, a message here saying, I sometimes see dreams that my child is lost or hurt badly. I wake up with a horrible fear and hope that I never see that dream again. I never imagine or think anything remotely near it. So why am I getting this dream and how can I stop it?
All right. In this case, the child does not represent your physical child, even though you're a mother. A child that you feel that is being threatened, it means that your own security, your own inner security is being threatened. Now, sometimes we might feel that as mothers, but most of the time we have to take a look at it from a positive perspective that, you know, your inner child or the young version of you, there's a security threat on it, meaning that you feel uncomfortable. You feel like you need more security. Maybe you need more financial support. Maybe you need more support in terms of having that stability in your household. So
it's really speaking to that vulnerability, and that's how it's manifesting. There you go. Hope that helps. Okay. Anonymous. Dr. Joanna Khalifa is with us, spiritual psychologist, and we're talking about some of the most common dreams and symbols. And I'm glad this one came in. No mention of doing exams while wearing no clothes, but a 35-year-old is messaging saying, I keep dreaming about my university final exams. So those stressful situations like exams or being in school, I have frequent dreams about being on the radio and having no preparation. there being buttons I've never seen before, or being in another station, or there being no clock or no computer in the room. So those kind of stressful environments. In this case, a 35-year-old who keeps dreaming about university final exams. What does that mean, Dr. Joanna?
You're not prepared. Anything that relates to your clothes, anything that relates to technology falling out, anything that relates to, you're not fast enough or you're not good enough, is an indication from your subconscious mind that when you go to work or when you go to a research project, you're not prepared enough. Mm. And this is something that we have to know. Most of the energy or most of the likelihood of something going correct is actually in the preparation. If you prepare for your meetings, if you prepare for your work life, if you prepare for everything, you're going to achieve whatever it is that you want in your life. And a dream telling you that you're unprepared, that, you know, perhaps you're not so well dressed or whatever the situation
at
with the clothes
dressed.
Are indication that you're not not at all dressed, right? That those are indications that you're not prepared, right? That you're going there trying to, you know, play it as it goes. And your mind is telling you this is not an optimum state you need to be going in. For some people, it works for sure. I'm not denying it. But for others, it doesn't. And if you're dreaming about that, it means it doesn't work for you.
That is so interesting. A similar one here saying, my frequent dream is about me not completing my studies in university. And I've got at least one subject I need to complete. Worth mentioning the particular subject I had difficulties with during my university years.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Delighted to be in conversation this afternoon with Dr. Joanna Khalifa, assuring us as a spiritual psychologist as we decode your dreams and look at the most common symbols as well. Thank you so much for your time today, John. I really, really appreciate it. And lots of people understandably getting in touch because many of us dream every single night. Mine have subplots, secondary characters. I wake up thinking that was like some kind of murder mystery and why don't I write this down? Do you think everybody dreams? Because some people say they wake up and they didn't dream at all.
Everybody dreams, with no exception, Helen. Absolutely, everybody dreams. But some people just simply don't remember their dreams. And it's important that we make an effort to remember our dreams, but in the shortest way possible. Most of us say, okay, I don't recall tonight having a dream, or I don't remember a dream, purely because we haven't invested enough effort into it. But we all dream, with no exception.
Interesting. I'll tell my dad, because he's like, no, don't do it. Coming to the text line, lots of people getting in touch wanting to get to the bottom of theirs. And I completely understand it, because our dreams can stay with us sometimes the next day. Sometimes they can haunt us in the best or worst possible way. And it can be recurring. Kumar's been in touch saying, I've got a neurological disorder which doesn't allow me to run or progress further for the last 2 years. But I have constant dreams in the night of running and becoming okay. Can you please explain?
So this is a hopeful dream, and I think it's valuable for the person to actually look into neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity is a branch of psychology that can actually help you overcome neurological disorders. And perhaps this dream is an indication that you are ready to heal and transform and take yourself to that next level. And the fact that you're dreaming of running means that your body and your mind are now ready to embrace that idea that you can actually heal and move and, you know, just literally start running, jogging, and go into running again. The branch in psychology is called neuroplasticity, and there's a lot of it on the internet, or you can consult with a doctor, and it is powerful to regenerate any neurological disorder.
Oh, right. Well, there you go, Kumar. I really hope that helps, and all the very best with how you are feeling. Josh wants to know about a recurring dream that he's had. He's saying, I have dreamt about 4 flight crashes where I was on the flight. The flight took off and then it crashed, but miraculously I was saved all 4 times. Planes crashing, falling out of the sky, but yet he is okay. What could Josh be dreaming about?
All right. So, Josh, it's very interesting what you're dreaming. So you probably have plans, and you probably have things that you're really driving you forward, and you're hoping that will, you know, progress in life. So basically some big desire that you have that almost seems like it's impossible. It almost feels like you're going to have to fly off in order to achieve that dream. And in this instance, you're dreaming that it's crashing, meaning that your fears are holding you back. You're unable to take control of this quick maneuver in your life, or this quick takeoff in your life. But the dream is actually a very powerful positive message showing you don't fear that, first of all, not that you're not going to crash, but you're okay regardless of whether it crashes or not. We most of the time think, okay, a business has to go through in order for us to, you know, feel okay. But in this instance, it's actually telling you your fear of crashing is holding you back. You are okay. You are ready to take that plunge, to take it forward. So good luck with that.
Good luck, Josh. Love the sound of that. Brahim has said, is it true that bad dreams can kill you in your sleep by causing a heart attack? That's another terrifying aspect. Thanks for that, Brahim. Any truth in this? Can bad dreams give you a heart attack? Kill you in your sleep? Oh, please say no.
You know, dreams are supposed to be a fun way into self-exploration and self-help. So, Brahim, yes, the truthful
right.
answer, yes, I'm really sorry, but it's not that common. It's like anything that can potentially scare you or terrify you to death. It's the same percentage. If you have that kind of, you know, a shock or something, it can happen, but it's very, very rare and very highly unlikely.
Okay, so I don't need to fear going to bed tonight. Thanks, Brahim. Every day's a school day, not always a good one.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
In conversation now, talking dreams with Dr. Jana Khalif, joining us from London. She's a spiritual psychologist known to interpret dreams and give advice based on your circumstances. Heard from Rory earlier, Dr. Jana, who was saying he's had recurring dreams about levitating, flying, rotating above the ground rather than soaring. Any insights on that kind of flying dream?
Flying dreams are very common, and they are my favorite type of dreams because flying dreams are an indication of a desire to learn and grow and just literally gain more education, gain more awareness, gain more spirituality. And the fact that he's not really like that, he's just really low to the ground, it's an indication that basically, he is still seeking education or learning on its most basic form. So the moment he begins to explore higher levels of education, meaning more self-awareness, more self-development, more spiritual studies, then you will be able to truly lift off, right? Any dream that you have that is flying and you're flying big, it's a huge desire to learn and a huge desire to experience life and see life from multiple and big picture perspective.
Dr. Joanna, can I ask you, I'm glad we haven't had any messages that have concerned you today, but have you ever had a client and you've decoded their dream or looked at some of the symbols and it's been quite an upsetting interpretation?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, the science behind dream interpretation comes from the science of Carl Jung. Carl Jung was one of the most famous psychologists who began this journey of dream interpretation and a means by which it can actually predict things that can happen. Because potentially our mind is creating our reality. So sometimes dreams are indications of future things that can happen or fears. And of course, we don't go that on, like we don't talk about that on a radio show. But yes, when you're in one-to-one sessions or when you're going through a healing journey, many disturbing dreams do come up and some can be avoided and others are part of our journey in life. So yes, of course, there are many times that, you know, you decode a dream and you know that, you know, it's coming from an unpleasant place.
Okay. Now, on a more pleasant note, you've got some tips on how to dream and sleep better. Tell us more.
All right. So basically, one of the things that if you can do before you sleep is go into a 5-minute meditation. This is very powerful. It helps your body relax. It helps your body know that you're safe, that you're secure. And many of the viewers had questions about, you know, fears and security. So this is something powerful that they can do before they go to sleep. Just a 5-minute meditation, whether it's a breathing technique, whether it's, anything that can help them relax, whether it's a herbal tea, right? Whether it's a pleasant conversation or a book, anything that can put your body at ease, that this is okay, you've had a good day, you can now begin to, you know, calm yourself down and drift off to sleep. Most of us think that, okay, please, let's just go to sleep now. No, actually, the body needs some time, all right, in order to relax and drift into sleeping, which means that any dream you have after that is more powerful, is more pleasant, and it's coming from a higher place and a better consciousness. So this is one of the things that helps us in relaxing before sleeping and before dreaming. Another thing is hot showers and soaking your feet in hot water. It reminds us that, you know, we're safe. It's against that feeling of safety and that ability to let go. Another one, which is your viewers will love this unless you're lacto intolerant, but regardless, you can use it with any form of milk, right? It's milk and a little bit of honey, milk and turmeric. Actually, milk and turmeric is one of the most healthy things that you can drink. But milk and turmeric, anything that, again, lavender tea, we said that, but anything that has milk in it reminds us of that warmth, that security, and that comfort. Oh. Another thing that you can do is revise your day, right? If you manage to categorize your day into what you did today that was good, that was positive, you know, injecting gratitude, injecting appreciation into your day, then actually that enhances your dream state, and it also enhances your next day. You know, the things you do throughout your next day. So these are some of the things from food, from mental that you can actually do to sleep better. Avoiding heavy foods, it also helps in, you know, avoiding heavy foods such as meat and, you know, and bread, anything like that can also help enhance your dream state at night. So this is one of the things. Also, make sure you get a good pillow. Pillows are very important. Make sure that, you know, the pillowcase is made of cotton, all of these things that actually enhance your sleep and can make you more productive the next day. Make sure you have a good pillow.
Oh, you've made, I get excited about going to sleep every night, but I'm even more excited for this evening. One last interpretation, no name on this one, saying, I have a reoccurring dream that I'm falling from a tall building, then wake up when I reach the bottom. Can you give us a quick 10-second decoding of that, Dr. Joanna?
Yes, absolutely. This is not actually a dream as such. This is actually the way that your soul comes down into your body at night. So basically what happens is that your body and your soul are reconnecting. So it feels like you're going down and then, you know, you're hitting your body. This is a powerful dream. It happens to everybody. And this is the jitter that we do at night. So feel safe, feel relaxed. Don't worry so much about it. It is not a fall. There's nothing bad happening. It's just a normal, your mind deciphering the experience it's having, the soul going into your body.
There you go. Hope that helps. And thank you, Dr. Joanna Cleef, for joining us. So insightful, so interesting. And I hope everyone has sweet dreams tonight.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It is our psychology hour today and delighted to be joined by Dr. Thryer. She's a clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute in Clinic. And we're talking about dating. So here's my question to you. Would you rather be with someone who is smart or funny? Remember, this is someone you're going to spend the rest of your life with. Here's what Shruti said.
I would pick myself because I am smart and funny. No, but on a serious note, I think I would pick someone who is smart because I think funny can get a bit tiring after a while. And also, like, what if they start repeating jokes? I won't be able to sit through that. I'd rather have smart, intelligent conversations with someone for the rest of my life than listen to recycled jokes.
Okay. Well, here's Maitha.
I think I'll go with someone who's smart because smartness can be applied in everyday life. If it's about funny, well, I'm funny for the both of us. So smartness is something that's very attractive.
So two ladies there saying they want a smart gentleman. Naveed's been on touch 4001 saying funny for sure. Funny people are smart by default. Smart people might not be funny. What about you? Dr. Thryer, why are we talking about this? What's been happening in the world of research?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of research is coming out that's showing individuals are actually preferring funny over smart. And it's not smart as an actual intellect. It's a like subjective perception of smart. And it's very interesting because when we look at the research that shows relationship and healthy relationship statuses, we know that funny is not what makes a relationship. And so we're finding a lot of this, conflictual kind of research that's coming out, which is very interesting for us moving forward and very interesting for us in terms of how we can educate individuals on what they should be looking for.
Or how to position yourself if you are looking for someone yourself. So this is about...
Yes, just without that manipulative part.
it's a good job I'm off the market. So the study shows, the findings suggest that objectively measured intelligence does not increase your appeal, but being funny does. So if you are going around the world, I think about this, James Bond or Chandler Bing, who would you choose, Dr. Thryer?
Chandler Bing or Ross?
I said James Bond.
A bit extreme. Oh, James Bond.
Yeah. Who doesn't love a gadget? Have you found this these results surprising then in your years of research, marriage counseling as well?
Surprising, no. And I'll tell you why. Because you know what, Helen? When we laugh, what happens when we laugh?
We feel good.
Our pain tolerance decreases, it increases. Our pain tolerance increases. Our fight or flight response lessens. You know, we strengthen our bonds with the individuals that we are actually laughing with. You know, we have calories. We even burn burn calories. We have endorphins that come up. I mean, there's so many positives to laughter. So it's not shocking and surprising that individuals would actually prefer funny over smart. However, the message that came in, the individual had said, you know, people who are funny are smart, but not necessarily people who are smart are funny. That's actually not correct. Because when we measure intelligence, verbal intelligence is necessary for being funny, but not like intelligence in general. Mm-hmm. And so not all funny people are smart. And some smart and definitely smart people can be funny. So these are unfortunately the black and white ways of us, of our thinking that is hindering the way that we look at relationships. And it's actually going to unfortunately cause difficulties when it comes to appreciating the qualities that our partner has or in a potential partner.
When you, I don't want you to reveal what clients are saying to you, but I also kind of do. But when we think about people who are looking for love, who are, you know, dating in Dubai, what are some of the common things that you have men and women putting on their wish list in a potential partner? What would you say the top three would be?
Wow. I would have to say, especially in Dubai, loyalty is the first one.
Ooh, it sounds like people have been burnt.
Yes, that's a big one. That's a big one here. So loyalty, honesty, and respect. So those, I would say, would be the top three.
And do you think it would be different in other parts of the world?
Not necessarily different, but I would say maybe not as highlighted, because those three things that I just mentioned, Helen, are so basic. They shouldn't even be things that we're looking for. They should be things that exist regardless. And unfortunately, when we put so much emphasis on these three basic qualities that humanity should have when interacting with other individuals, especially when you're looking for relationships, it shows how much we're missing it.
Mm-hmm. So do you think people are choosing partners based on the wrong criteria? You know, criteria that perhaps wouldn't necessarily make a good relationship?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I see it so many times. And to be fair, and it's not just on a professional level, but even on a personal level, like I see it with my friends, with people that I know. And then I'll hear these things that are very interesting. Well, they'll negate or neglect all the horrible things that the person is doing and say, well, you know, he or she is so funny and they make me laugh. And I'm like, yes, but that's not the criteria for a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And so what I feel we're doing is that we're missing all the basics. And I actually talk about this extensively, especially on the IGTVs that I do. I talk about the idea of having basics and standards. And I think we are lowering our standards as individuals when it comes to relationships, because we're so scared of being alone. And fair enough, because the world is feeling a lot more lonely due to globalization. People are moving to different countries. They don't have their nuclear family around them as much as they used to. And on top of that these bigger cities can be very lonely in nature to develop deep, meaningful relationships.
Ooh, let us know. Are you scared of being alone? Do you think that's led you to lowering your standards? Lots of people saying that they would rather smart over funny. So going against what this study is saying. And we're loving the voice notes we're getting as well. This is from our tech guy, Dinesh.
If I had to choose between someone who's funny or smart, I'd choose smart. I've got funny covered. So smart, definitely.
Good for him. So if you're with someone who is both smart and funny, give them a shout out. Mr. Farmer, yep, he's ticking the boxes.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
So let's imagine a situation where two guys, a funny one and a smart one, walk up to a woman. Who do you think would get that girl? According to new research, it would be, Dr. Thuraya, the funny one.
The funny one.
So
yes.
Do you agree or disagree? Let us know. Smart over funny seems to be the general consensus on the text line. But what about you? Would you rather be with someone who is smart or funny? This is someone that you need to spend the rest of your life with. Many people getting in touch. Dr. Thuraya is joining us from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Here's Ruth.
I would love to date someone who's funny because I think me as a person, I take myself too seriously. Having someone who is funny to kind of help me find that balance and find that humor in life. I'd love to date someone who's able to laugh at himself or at life or find the humor in a situation.
I have to say, there's nothing worse to my mind than when someone takes themselves too seriously, Dr. Ryer. It gives me the massive, massive ick. It really does. I've got a really interesting message from Omar. It's kind of off topic, but I'm very curious to get your take on it. Omar says, thanks both. A smart woman over funny for sure for me, but this has got me thinking. Question for you and everyone out there. Would you date you? He says, I wouldn't date me. I'm far too antisocial, busy doing my own thing, staring at screens and being stressed. I'm not sure whether I'm interested in getting into another relationship anyway, but curious to get your thoughts. Dr. Thuraya, would you date you?
No, there's too much up here. This is not okay. Absolutely not.
This is where
I hope that somebody else will take that responsibility.
Yeah, I think I was a much more appealing prospect 10 years ago. What about you? Let us know. 4001. Would you date you? Very curious. Omar, great question. And lots of you getting in touch saying smart over funny. It's really interesting. Here's Kira.
I would definitely be with someone who is funny. If I were to live with this person for the rest of my life, then that would be something really important to me because I'm already smart. So I can like balance that out.
Dr. Thoreau, you mentioned earlier about that fear of being alone and really having expectations that have been lowered so much that even the basics, being trustworthy, being decent, being honest, has been held up as being elusive and simply not possible. Anonymous message here, and I really hope you can offer some insights. It's anonymous, and as ever, you can always message the show and not include your name if you're looking for some advice or just want to share. Saying, I'm a 25-year-old man, I've been dumped again, second time in 2 years, and I'm feeling I just can't be enough. I'm average height, 5'10", quite insecure about this. Average face, I've graduated, but I've got an average job in finance. I'm kind, I'm really trying to look after my partner, can hold a conversation, but it always feels like there's someone better she can get. My question is this, will women always go after the taller, richer versions of me? How much do they really care about kindness and the fact I do my best? Sometimes I just feel like giving up. Oh, I just want to give you a hug, Dr. Thoreau. What help can we offer this, what sounds like an amazing, amazing young man?
Well, one thing that I can say for sure is that the women that are looking for the richer, taller, and more superficial characteristics are definitely not the women that you're interested in. And so that, if they want that, then that's great for them. But that's not something that you're looking for. And you're looking for something a lot more meaningful and a lot deeper. Mm-hmm. And so it's good that they're not looking for you. Right. So that's a good place to start in terms of how you think about it. A second thing is to kind of recognize that, you know, there's always going to be somebody who's richer, who's taller, who's better looking. But there are also people who are not as rich, not as tall, not as good looking. And
not
so
as
when
nice.
We compare ourselves, I'm sorry,
not as nice. See, like he just sounds like such a good, decent bloke.
Absolutely. You know, but when we stop comparing ourselves to other people, we start to recognize our own great qualities. And instead of looking at what she could have, show her who you are. And if that's not enough for her, then it's better to find somebody who will take you for who you are in your entirety, love you for all your qualities, good, bad, and ugly, and still appreciate everything that you do for her.
I think about this with jobs a lot when people are really nervous about a job interview and going into a company and feeling like the potential employer has all the power. And I remember when I was looking for work when I was in my 20s and getting really down about it, my mum going, they would be lucky to have you. Like you're trying them out just as much as that you know, they're trying you out. And I think that's the attitude you need to go in, that the right person will love you for, as Dr. Thoreau says, the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything that makes you you. And honestly, these women sound horrible. So I really hope you, I really hope you're all right. Do not lower your standards. Do not settle. And I think that's, you're 25 as well. You're 25. Not to sound like your mum, but you know, you're 25.
You know, Helen, I think something that's really important to remind people is that you don't have to pick between smart or funny.
No.
You know, these are on continuum. Sometimes we're funny and sometimes we're just not funny. And like, there's no, it's not black or white. It's not either this or that. You either are taking smart or you're taking funny. I mean, somebody could be funny in some instances, or they could have different types of humor, and the same thing with intellect. So it's important to kind of, you know, remember that life and relationships are in the gray. Mm-hmm. So not to worry too much.
And no one is perfect. Not even you.
Yeah.
What I find interesting is that everyone in the world thinks that they've got a good sense of humour and they've got good taste. Everyone does. And I love this message from Abdeslim saying, I would date me. At least I get my jokes. And Ella echoing that saying, it's a tough one, but I think funny over smart, but can't be completely blameless. There is someone for everyone who will get your weird jokes, who will get your weird quirks and will love you for you. Dr. Thoreau, thank you so much as ever for your time. You're an absolute superstar. I would date you.
Thank you.
If I wasn't married and it was okay to do that. You're a superstar. And as we said, you are back for our Psychology Hour every single Tuesday afternoon.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It is our Psychology Hour, and I'm very curious, is your memory fading? Do you feel like you need to boost it? We have got the memory coach, Josh McCartney, giving us a few tips on how to do just that. So Josh, do some people naturally have a good memory? And equally, do some have a bad memory?
The ability of the brain is relatively the same from person to person, right? And you'll find that certain people will remember certain things better. So if you're an accountant, you're probably going to remember numbers better than a musician. So a musician will probably remember lyrics better than an accountant, for example. So it depends on what you deliberately focus on and place more importance on, what you practice more frequently, and then the brain becomes, it creates a habit around what it begins to memorize. Some people are very good with names because at some point in their life, they made names very, very important. So they had their own process, which they don't even know they're doing, of spaced repetition, where you remember it in increasing intervals over time and it locks into long term. They have other techniques where they just might remember them at nighttime, you know? So they're just more deliberate about the things they remember. However, as we get a bit older, we get a little bit less deliberate about it.
So I used to pride myself on having a pretty exceptional memory, especially with names, situations. I had kids and it all went down the toilet. So what impact does age have on your ability to process and store more information?
So in terms of your ability to process raw information, that begins to peak at around 18 or 19 years old. Your short-term memory, it continues to improve until you're about 25, and then it starts to level off, and then it takes a bit of a dip at around 35 years old. But your ability to be able to evaluate emotional states in people begins to peak in your 40s or 50s. Regardless of what your age, remember this, that if you use your brain, it gets better. If you don't use it, it gets smaller. It's like a muscle in the gym. You use it or you lose it. It's the same sort of thing, right? I would say that in terms of having kids, there's probably some effects with the hormone balances and stuff as well. Absolutely. However, you're probably more focused on what the kids are doing than what's happening to you. And you're exhausted. So there's only so much that the brain can focus on. And it's going to try to conserve that energy. If it expends energy, it means it must be very, very important. Okay, so we'll try to conserve energy where possible. And if you're spending all your time chasing after the kids, where the toys are, what they need to eat, what time it is, why they're crying, why they're not crying, la, 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 you know, you're not focusing on remembering your own life, the conversations you have, because your life is now a bit more important. Focus on them.
So what you really mean is baby brain is a reflection on me being a really good mum. A lot of people have reported brain fog during the pandemic. Have you seen this with people that you work with?
So I don't think that the pandemic's necessarily caused brain fog. It's more like paralysis on what to do next, right? So when situations change drastically, it's not always the fastest, the strongest, or the smartest that end up surviving, but it's those who are able to adapt, right? So in the context of the pandemic and jobs and livelihoods, that means to be able to reskill and keep your job or pick a new one, new hobbies, right? And the ability to be able to learn is a key skill that is often the bottleneck as to why people feel like they feel brain fog or stuck with what to do next. So a lot of the time it's just, you don't quite know what to do next.
Brain coach Josh McCartney giving us a few tips on how to boost our memory, and it's stuff we can do anywhere.
When you're meeting somebody, try and remember 4 details about what they're wearing. So it might be the color of their top, it might be the necklace they're wearing, maybe a bracelet, maybe the shirt, maybe the shoes. Whatever, 4 details about that person. And then I want you to remember that night as well, and then the next day. Once you get a little bit better at remembering 4 details, you can either increase the amount of details to 5, 6, or 7, or you can add a second person that you remember the 4 details of. So this is a very, very passive form of memory training where it doesn't require any visualization techniques, but it gets you a lot more focused, clear, and aware, and then deliberate about recalling information, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of things like names and faces, a lot of it is also a habit. We don't practice the skill of remembering names. A lot of the time when we meet somebody, we're thinking in our head, oh, what have I got to do later today? Who's talking to me? What was that message? La, 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 la. So we're having 2 conversations at once, and neither of those involve their name. So the name goes in one ear and completely out the other. So what I want people to do is when they're about to meet somebody is in their minds, repeat after me. What is the name? What is their name? What is the name? What is the name? What is the name? What is their name? It's going to turn your brain on to focus and find the name. And then during the conversation, I want you to use it. Hey, Helen, how you doing, Helen? What do you think about this, Helen? La, 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 la. As you leave, goodbye, Helen. And then the most important part is get into the habit of every night when you brush your teeth to go over, who did I meet that day? Who have I met recently? Who have I met that week? While you're brushing your teeth, it takes 30 seconds, 2 minutes, preferably 2 minutes, obviously. But you should be getting the habit of doing that because it's going to teach your brain that this information is more important and pay more attention next time for when it happens, okay? So rather than it turning off to names and faces, it'll turn on to names and faces.
Like many people, I love my phone. It's got people's numbers stored on it. I've got a calculator. But because I don't need to memorize numbers anymore, it could be affecting our ability to remember them. So what advice does Josh McCartney give?
With our phone, you mentioned a really good point about the phone, right? So there's a term that's coined recently in 2012. It was called digital dementia. And essentially what that means is that ordinary day-to-day people are experiencing the same sort of cognitive disabilities as people with severe head trauma and psychiatric illnesses. And it's because we outsource our brain to a device that we trust. So the phone, right? Exactly what you said. I don't need to remember numbers, so the brain doesn't have the ability anymore to do so. Doesn't mean you can't retrain it. It means that our to-do lists, we don't put it in our head, we put it in our phone. So we're continuously outsourcing our brain and its capabilities to a device that we trust. In something like numbers, a really, really easy way would be to chunk the numbers. So your brain can only hold anywhere between 5 ± 2 items at any given time. So between 5 and 9 items. But it's more like closer to 4 to 7, realistically. You might notice that credit cards are bunched up in 4 chunks of 4. Phone numbers are generally bunched up in 3 chunks of like 3, 3, 4, that sort of thing. So remembering the chunks, remembering it in sets of 2s or sets of 3s. This way, the brain doesn't need to remember any more than 3 numbers rather than trying to remember 9 separate numbers.
Healthy Habits
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Great to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Is your memory failing you? Do you feel like you could boost it? Whether that is names, numbers, maybe you're giving a presentation. We're speaking to the memory coach, Josh McCartney, and he's giving us a few tips and tricks on how to do just that. So Josh, how can we memorize information from a book or a movie?
Try and engage yourself more visually inside of the actual storyline itself. So a lot of time when we're watching a movie, we're probably just trying to go for the way it feels, not for how it actually would seem to be inside of it. Humans are incredible at visualization. We're so good at it that we don't even know we're doing it. When we do visualization processes like meditation or something like that, a lot of the time people aren't actually engaging their senses into the visualization. So that means your touch, taste, smell, hearing, sight, right? So if you're in the movie, I want you to pretend like you can touch, taste, and smell and actually feel the details about what's happening within the movie, within the book. Actually engage yourself as if you were there first person. It's also going to train your focus and awareness and concentration, everything, right? So as you start to do this more frequently, you'll just notice that you just start to remember more stuff, right? Because you're more consistently engaged. So when you're having a conversation, pretend like what they're saying is you saying it. Actually be that person, but feel it with all your senses, all your 5 senses, engage them. Once you start to add the sensory detail into visualizations, then it will just become more naturally consistent for you and more of a habit. But that's a really, really good way to start training your focus and creativity.
It is exam period if they haven't been cancelled. So Josh, if you could go back to your school days, would you revise differently knowing what you know now as a memory coach?
Absolutely. Oh, I wish I had them back in the days. My goodness. So I would firstly, if you're a student, listen up, write it down. I would check out a process called spaced repetition. I mentioned it at the start of this talk, but spaced repetition is the best way to add information into long-term memory. So you know that repetition is the mother of all skill. Well, spaced repetition would be the grandmother, the more wise and deliberate version. Essentially what spaced repetition is when you learn a new piece of information, well, then you would remember it. It's been shown that if you don't repeat information within 6 days, you forget around 90% of it within 6 days. You don't repeat it, okay? So after about an hour, you start to lose around 50% of the information you've learned. So what you want to do is recall the information 1 hour after you learn it, and then maybe a few hours after that, and then maybe 24 hours, and then maybe 72 hours. So you're increasing the time frame in which you remember the information. No, you're not relearning the information, you're just recalling it. It only takes you a few seconds to recall the information, but you're keeping the connections in your brain strong and you're strengthening them for long term. I would also look into something like mind mapping. It visually places everything in front of you in the same way that the neurons connect in your brain. And it's a really, really good way for getting a comprehensive overview of whatever you're studying or whatever you're learning, just to see it right in front of you. And also It shows you the way that your neurons are personally connecting in your brain. So you can go to YouTube and check out mind mapping or message me and I'll teach you whatever other way. Those are two really, really good skills. But the most important would be spaced repetition.
What about teaching someone that information? When you're the conduit of that information, do you think you actually retain more of it as well?
Absolutely. So something taught once is something learned twice. So the way that the brain kind of works is when we're hearing information, we're only hearing it. We're only hearing the analytical, philosophical brain, right? The neocortex, the front section. But we're not actually engaging it into our actual biochemistry, our actual body, you know? We're not actually embodying the information. So when we teach it, we're forcing our brain to actually really think about it and forces the brain to crystallize the information in a way that we need to actually present it in real time. Rather than just knowing the information is there somewhere, we're actually forced to putting it into a tangible sentence. And then to be able to actually find associations and concepts to relate so that we can teach it more thoroughly as well. You don't even need to teach it to a person. You can explain the information that you learn to a brick wall. Speaking it out loud and explaining the information that you learn is something that I actually do in my workshops. I get people to explain the information back and forth to what we just learned in the past few minutes. So it starts to really crystallize the information in their brain. And it's also getting them to summarize the material as well. So a really quick way for them to, you know, connect the dots themselves.
That was Josh McCartney, the memory coach here in the UAE. So try his techniques and let me know if they work.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You can tune in to Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. It helps other people find us, boost us in the ratings, and you'll get it direct to your phone.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.